Hello and welcome to a new episode of BL Podcast. I am Anshika Kaista and we have with us today Mr. Raul Rebello, MD and CEO Designate of Mahindra & Mahindra Financial Services. Hi sir, thank you for joining us. Welcome to the podcast.
Just to start off with, we're entering into 2024 and we're looking at a new year ahead of us. It's also the end of the FY24 financial year. Looking at the sort of transition period and going into the new year, what are your sort of expectations from the NBFC sector? We've seen a lot of growth happening with the sector has been over the last 2-3 years, especially since the pandemic. We've seen a lot of rapid growth, especially in the retail segment. We've had some ups and downs in terms of the rural economy slowing down and again now starting to pick up. Given that so much is happening, even at a macro scale, what is your overall outlook towards the sector and how are you looking at the industry going into the new year?
Thank you and really appreciate you doing this with us. For starters, I think if you've looked at the participation of NBFCs over the last few decades, they've very clearly been a very big contributor, right, to financial intermediation. And you know, as the country now has significant growth aspirations, we are targeting GDP growth of anywhere between 7% in the next decade. Credit forms the grease of growth. You know, if there's a decent amount of growth expected for a country like ours, wherein the household credit to GDP ratio is low, you need many more participants in the lending circle to provide that last mile credit. So in that context, right from, you know, let's start with the vehicle asset category. Probably NBFCs really drove that initiative before formidable lenders came to play. Now it's mainstay, wheels as a business is mainstay in banks, but NBFCs really created that category, and whether it's new vehicles, used vehicles, etc. But over a period of time, besides showing dominance in the vehicle lending, you have the likes of HFCs which came in, NBFCs plus HFCs, really pushing the agenda on mortgages, whether it is home finance, LAP, you know, construction finance, etc. And now if you see, NBFC is also the forefront of MSME lending. So I would say the big asset categories in lending continue to be where NBFCs participate in full throttle is in mortgages, the SME segment, and of course the wheels business. That together in a country like ours actually forms about 65% of the lending opportunity. So we are equal participants there with banks. We fight it out in terms of you know, market share in the marketplace. Of course, you can always say that banks have an advantage because of cost of funds. The prime customer segments will always veer towards you know, to banks. But in a country like ours, which has a huge amount of self-employed, huge amount of new to credit customers, NBFCs will continue to be playing that pivotal role in taking lending to the last mile, which, as I said, augurs well for a country which is hungry for looking at GDP growth in the 7% types of ranges. Now, coming to your second question on going forward, how do NBFCs, whether they tweak their models, whether they kind of learn a new trick, specifically you talked about some amount of slowdown in rural markets, because that's the frontier, you know, where NBFCs play. I think there's been, while RBI has been cautioning a certain kind of growth, which NBFCs have to keep a watch on, which is mostly unsecured. I think that's rightfully so. We have seen credit at a very fast pace, but we have not seen deposit growth catching up, right? And at some point of time, they need to converge, because that's the source of, to a large extent, deposit source your funding. The spot of bother has been in unsecured lending. The pace of growth over there, the kind of risk outcomes we are seeing in unsecured naturally requires the lending community to be more conscious of whether they should rein in some of the unfettered growth that's seen there. NBFCs who have been responsible have clearly tapered some of that enthusiasm, and RBI is very happy to wrap folks on the knuckle where they see that is not being demonstrated. But overall, unsecured growth I think is yet to come off. What we see, while RBI has done its job, they've kind of done risk weights adjustments, they've kind of asked banks to revisit the kind of lending they're doing to NBFC. They've done all that in place. I think it's time will tell when we should see some of the categories of growth which are growing at a pace which is probably not supposed to be at, that might start tapering off for now. On rural, I think growth is back. You're seeing the two-wheeler businesses, they're growing at 20% plus the last 3 months. So it was a year of rainfall shortage. It was a year wherein there were challenges in rural. But I think we are over the bend right now. We are seeing that come back.
So you mentioned the personal and the unsecured category. You as a company are growing your consumer book at a time when all of these issues have started cropping up and the concerns regarding accelerated growth. From an industry-wide perspective, also we're seeing a need for NBFCs to sort of diversify their portfolios, and we're seeing less and less companies become operating in niche segments. Are you feeling the pressure to, one, diversify your portfolio given the market scenario right now? And second, from an industry perspective, as more and more companies venture into this segment, especially the consumer and retail segments, do you see enough value given the competition intensity that we're sort of expecting play out in the coming quarters or years?
Yeah, so just to kind of give you full clarity on where we participate and where we don't, we are predominantly, even today, 95% of our lending is in the vehicle category. The remaining 5 is mostly in SME leasing, and that's, I would say, 90% secured. So we're very small, and in unsecured, we basically do business loans for small enterprises. Our view is that, considering we're a 1 lakh crore book right now, and we're so heavy in the wheels business, right? And I did mention earlier, the revenue pools in lending are largely in mortgages, the SME business, and in wheels. One sector we have a very dominant share, which is wheels. Our stated goal is to find more revenue or dip our beak into a more meaningful manner in the revenue pools of mortgages and SME. We really have no aspirations to become a personal loan leader or to now, at this point in the life cycle of where consumer durable loans has reached, for us to become a very meaningful player. We did some experiments for the last 2 years. In fact, in our last investor call, I made it public that we have sunset our consumer durable business. We found it too prohibitive with the existing entry barriers to really build a business model there. So we've given up our consumer durable aspirations. Personal loans, I think, is adjacent. Many of them do require personal loans. So we're not doing it for anybody who's new to Mahindra. We're doing it for folks who are existing, our customers who have had a favorable experience with us. We are building it around those customer segments. We have enough on our table right now in terms of our diversification into the mortgages businesses and into the MSME, as we call the SME businesses. It's going to be there, and we're largely going to be still remain a secured lender. We do believe that's a more, I would say, in our scheme of things, a more familiar territory to play it. And there is huge headroom for us to penetrate those segments before thinking of anything else in the unsecured space.
From a vehicle finance perspective, you mentioned, of course, you operate in most segments of three wheelers and above. One, we've been seeing some sort of premiumization of the market, at least in the passenger vehicle and CE segment. Is that something, and again, you've said this before also, that the second hand or the used vehicle segment is emerging as an opportunity, and that's growing possibly even faster than the first sale market. Within the vehicle finance segment, which verticals or which sub-segments do you see sort of carrying growth for you, and do you expect the second hand or the second vehicle could, as at an industry level, be more revenue accretive and more growth opportunistic?
See, we are from three wheelers upwards in all vehicle asset categories, right? Now, are some more attractive than the other? Definitely the answer is yes. Do we only focus on the ones where the revenue pools are the largest and the profitability, inherent profitability, is highest? Definitely you need to, and if we are completely commercially driven, we would do that. To answer your question, which are the vehicle categories which have more tailwinds attached to them, basis the demand that we are seeing, and you talked about premiumization. I think in the passenger vehicle space, the OEMs have given a guidance on how they're expecting calendar year 24 to kind of progress. What surprised everyone is the way in the January started. January saw 14% growth. But by and large, most OEMs, whether it's Maruti, Mahindra, and the dominant ones, are guiding for a sub 10% growth in terms of unit. What they're also guiding for is SUVs, which from 25-30% have now become 50% plus. Which means for a lender, the unit growth is sub 10%, but value growth will be in the early teens. So that's pretty much what we are also aspiring. We are aspiring for a loan book growth which is somewhere in the mid-teens. India as a market is still sub 4% in terms of passenger vehicle penetration. We thought of passenger vehicles as essential products. Today they become lifestyle products. you and I see a new model being launched kind of just unearths the whole set of excitement, and you see a category being created, and with the electric vehicles coming in, we're going to see a, especially Mahindra's new range of vehicles, you're going to see a new category being created, which will augur well for new demand, right? So passenger vehicle will always be a very big, exciting space for us to play with. Some customer segments who are extremely premium may not gravitate towards Mahindra Finance because we won't have the cost of funds to offer them. And that's why we've tied up with the likes of State Bank, Bank of Baroda. We believe that today revenue pools are not just there in lending, right? It's there also in distributing. And that's why there's a fee business that we'd like to use. Whether it's in passenger vehicles, whether it's used vehicle also, just considering the financial penetration today in used vehicles, which is so low, we are working in all kind of channels, whether it is the broker network, the dealer network. Today there's a whole community of online aggregators, right? Car and Buy, Car Deco, Spinny, Kuvi, all of them. So we're working with all channels because the maturity of each channel is evolving. And you can't just say I'll exploit one channel. And today we are the second largest used vehicle financer. When I'm talking about used vehicle, I'm talking about used PV. Right. Yeah. It's extremely attractive for us. The yields are good. The risk that we're seeing right now is something we can stomach. So it will be a going forward a dominant area of play for us.
You spoke about your distribution channels, and I think a big aspect over the last 2 years again in the post-pandemic period in terms of distribution has been the advent of digital channels and how the increasing dependence of such channels, which have largely disrupted how NBFCs approach their customer segments. Even in terms of use of technology and AI models and customizing products or personalizing customer segments, how do you think what trends do you think the industry is moving towards, and what are the advantages that they benefit taking out of these technology challenges, and how is Mahindra Finance looking at adopting some of these technologies to reach out to their customer base?
Yeah, I think everyone has to use Jenna in their vocabulary now. See, we've always been at the forefront of lending to customers in deep geographies, the self-employed customers, many of whom technology is still evolving today. So our approach has been, whether it's a tractor customer who is sometimes intimidated with using technology and doing a do-it-yourself journey, to a passenger vehicle customer is very fine if you just send them a link and they are happy to do the entire filling up a form themselves, attaching their documents with account aggregator giving consent. So we are at this great intersection of working with a very digitally mature customer at one side, and we are also very cognizant while working with a customer segment who's intimidated with technology. Right? Now, as a company, definitely if more of our customers adopt technology, adopt digital, it's good for us. It reduces our cost of acquisition. It reduces our operating expenses. Having said that, we want to be agents of evangelization for customers who are, let's say, in the early stage of their journey in adopting to digital tools, etc. We are still very comfortable playing the phygital mode, right? Where in our last mile, it's not for nothing that we have 30,000 employees in our company. A large part of what we encourage our employees to do is, as they are getting customers into the formal financial system, is to give them benefits of how they become aware, not just of using digital kits, but also of the downsides of digital. You know, leaving your digital footprint tomorrow could be very dangerous. Yes. You know, there are folks who are waiting to pounce on these unaware customers, and they'll be subject to frauds, etc. So we definitely play the role of benefits as well as giving them a great amount of evangelization of what could be the pitfalls of not being conscious of using digital, etc. So that's our approach on the customer side. At the company side, we want to be the most advanced and most, I would say, sophisticated version of an entity that employs digital, employs data, employs Gen AI toolkits. Right? An example is that today, if you look at even assisted modes, when our employees are interacting with customers, because of the availability of Gen AI tools, how best can they guide a customer on the best product for that customer by taking a few questions, summarizing it using our Gen AI models, giving them the best product that is good for the customer in the long run. So we are in fact, the group has invested in what we call Mahindra GenAI, right? Wherein these are toolkits wherein we are trying to bring the best of the Mahindra might, not just Mahindra Finance, in creating summarization, recommendation engines, which are best for this company. Using vernacular. With TechM, we are using 9 languages so that our employees can, even in dialects in UP and Hindi, be able to relate to customers better and help them ask questions and get responses which are trained, you know, at the back end in our model. So we are trying to be, as I said, the most sophisticated employer of all these toolkits, and at the same time see how to unlock this for the customer without being intimidating.
As an extension of that, you also mentioned a couple of, you've been tying up with a couple of fintechs. You also mentioned co-lending partnerships. Is that something that you think is the natural direction that the sector is moving towards, that it has to be a sort of, you will see more co-lending sort of arrangements, both with partnerships with fintechs and with other lenders coming up? Is that where directionally we're headed, given the sort of roles that each segment of lenders has picked up, and given the competition and everybody operating in the same sort of segment? Is that where we're eventually headed towards as a sector?
I definitely would endorse that thought process, because coming back to the first point, wherein we are a credit starved country, right?
Yeah.
We need to, there is need for credit to grease the system for GDP growth, whether it's on the consumption side or in setting up infrastructure, etc. In that context, customers should get the best cost of funds, right? Traditionally, everyone wanted to be a manufacturer and a distributor. But today, if consumers have to get a good rate, the banks are sitting at very attractive cost of funds. The NBFCs like us, as well as fintechs, have disrupted distribution. So how do you get the best of both worlds? So you have someone who has a great balance sheet, good cost of funds, and you have a distributor who has the best journeys for customers and has the most seamless UI, UX and engagement with customers. And I personally, even in my previous organization, have believed that partnerships is a way forward, especially in distributing last mile credit. The question is, you identify what value you bring to the table. As Mahindra Finance, we bring value to the table both sides. And that's why we've decided with a big bank like SBI, we be more of a distributor and, you know, get cost of funds at a discounted rate and distribute it to the customers who are price sensitive. Then for the very last mile customers, we've tied up with lending cart, etc. Because there is a set of customers who are completely new to credit. So there we play the senior partner role, and the fintechs and the smaller NBFCs play the junior partner role. So where they have better distribution than us, and they have better ability to engage with customers, we have a better balance sheet than them to bring to the table, and we tie up. So I think partnerships, there's this concept of lending as a service now, which has come up. We should all be agile to think of, at the end of the day, if consumers are at the center of what we want to add value, we should be able to work with partners to unlock value for the consumer, whether it's at a cost of fund benefit or whether it's in terms of convenience, bringing down TAT, selling the best products for the customer.
Right. So just to close off, we've had a lot of discussions around leadership in the BFSI segment and what a leadership strategy or a thought process, the impact it has on driving a certain strategy of a lender. I think you're the best person to have this conversation with at this point in time, because you'll be taking over the company, as heading the company from effective April end. What are your thoughts on how leadership can drive sort of a company forward, and how are you looking at this transition process for the company, and maybe your strategy taking over, heading it?
See, what I've seen of late is that the quintessential yardstick of who leads which organizations are being questioned, right? And that's because business models are being questioned. I mean, traditionally banks thought of themselves as just folks who are custodians of public deposits and distributors of lending products and, of course, insurance, etc. Today, many lenders and NBFCs look at themselves as tech companies, as digital companies who, required to be as agile as the tech industries or, consumer-facing companies who are, like, say, FMCG companies. So what I've seen is that very openness to get in folks who are leading e-commerce companies into banking, folks who have consumer insights and the ability to, create products which consumers really fly off the shelves. So that's been a change, right? And we've seen that happen. You've seen the top talent from Amazon, Flipkart coming to banks, mainstream banks. You've seen bankers getting into NBFCs.
Yeah.
I think that agility in leadership mindset is required. I've been a beneficiary. I mean, I've been a banker, and you know, as a traditional NBFC, they've trusted me in running this. So I've actually encouraged a lot of young talent also coming into this organization. We look at folks who are traditionally run, let's say, some kind of business in the wheels business, give them an option to run a non-wheel business in the SME front or leasing front. Overall, I think leadership today has to accommodate versatility. Business models, as I said, are changing, so we should be agile to look at very holistic revenue pools. Revenue pools are being disrupted. When you look at in the financial space, there are such diverse revenue pools. I mean, one would think of lending revenue pools, so there are distribution revenue pools. The insurance revenue pools are opening up in a big way. They are very, very formidable regulator in IRDA. They are looking at insurance very differently. The whole AMC business, the whole broking business. So I think what calls for our leaders to understand what are the linkages between revenue pools that are available for them. Leaders who are able to be agile in thinking how their organizations can be agile to tap into those revenue pools.
Yeah.
Right? And how they can create an org structure which is versatile, which is agile, which is a learning organization, which promotes the right, and I say gratifies the right behaviors. Unfortunately, we all are slaves of living quarter to quarter, so we tend to gratify quarterly results. But you're seeing that shift. You're seeing leaders who are building organizations, creating talent pools to surface for the longer run. And I'm happy to join an organization which is as long as Independent India. We have been the pioneers of thinking long term. I couldn't have asked for a better place to come to an organization which pushes the thinking of building for long term. And having that advantage, I'm just using and really looking forward to the next growth of we have great plans for Mahindra Finance. And you're seeing a lot of leadership changes even in NBFCs of late. I'm sure it's going to be a very competitive landscape going forward. Yeah.
All the best to you, sir. And
thank you.
Thank you for the very candid conversation. It's been a pleasure talking to you. Thank you for joining
us.
That was it on today's episode. This is Anshika signing off till the next PL podcast. Thank you for listening in.